The From Day One podcast is brought to you by The Bridge. Visit us at thebridgebk.com.
Hi, I'm Nick Bailey, and this is the From Day One podcast. Today's guest is Penda Aiken, president of Penda Aiken Incorporated. Founded in 1990, Penda Aiken Incorporated, or PAI, is a leading staffing agency, helping both job seekers and employers. Working in more than a dozen industries, Aiken says that the company's goal is to recruit the best talent from diverse ethnicities and skill sets and place them at premier companies that value their workforce. These days, the company hosts a cloud-based front and back office platforms, access to job boards, and user-friendly apps. Aiken has successfully led the forward-thinking team through decades of rapid industry and workforce change and has grown the company's annual sales to $15 million. She has an MFA from Columbia University and is based here in Brooklyn. Penda, thanks so much for taking the time to come in.
Well, thank you for having me.
So you started the company in 1990. Tell us a little bit about what were you doing sort of just before that? Did you grow up in Brooklyn? Were you from here? Had you been living here for a long time?
Well, actually, I grew up on Long Island, and I moved to Brooklyn after I graduated from high school. And my goal ultimately was to get my PhD in psychology. So while in school, I knew it was going to take a number of years for that to happen, quite a number of years. I was a single parent and needed to generate income. So I started typing school papers. A friend told a friend, and she and I started working together, and that company blossomed to the point where I had to drop out of school, and that's how I became an entrepreneur. So
you're an accidental entrepreneur in some ways, right?
Yes, certainly. And from there, in developing a cottage industry of at-home typists, a number of our clients wanted the work done in-house. And for me, it was a great opportunity to enter into the staffing, or back then it was called the employment field, whereby we would recruit the personnel and send them to the work site, and the supervisor would supervise. So ultimately, I closed down the typing service, worked 5 years at a staffing firm to learn the industry and make a contribution. I started up their legal division, first temp legal division in that company, which was a permanent placement agency in the Wall Street area, and started my company in 1990. So that's how I got started.
So back then, you know, staffing agencies, it's a term, you know, it's still a term that exists, of course, and there's outsourcing and stuff and whatever. But back then, you know, tell us a little bit about what staffing agencies were like, who was using them, you know, it was a different market for labor back then. It was harder to find people back then, right?
Well, it depends upon what industry you're looking in. There was always, I shouldn't say always a demand, because when we had the recession, the staffing industry is generally the first indicator of a downturn. So in those up years, staffing was always in demand. As a matter of fact, Kelly was one of the first staffing agencies, and I believe that company was started around 1950. Mm-hmm. So there's always been a need for companies to use staffing companies to help them build out their workforce. At that time, my industry was legal, very large corporate law firms. There was a lot of merger and acquisitions work going on. There was a clear need for people with diverse backgrounds. Initially, the corporations and the Wall Street companies were very selective in the type of personnel that they requested that the staffing agencies recruit for them. So I found legal as a woman of color. It was a great industry for me to focus in order to get the personnel that I wanted to place jobs. So to answer your question, there's always been a need for support. Now the question is what kind or how do you get that support, whether you recruit it on your own as a company or use outside support services.
What made you think, you know, when you started the company, what made you think that there was a problem that you uniquely would be sort of suited to solve, different than other agencies out there?
Well, there was a big shakeup in the industry in that a lot of the corporations or companies, I'm not going to distinguish corporations from the different other types of industries, they were very selective in whom they wanted to hire. My area of specialty, as I mentioned, was legal and also office administration. So a lot of the people of color were primarily hired in the maintenance, mailroom type of positions, and the opportunities, although the skills were there, was lacking. So There was a shakeup. A number of staffing agencies went under because of coding to distinguish ethnicities and genders. And so this is clearly before the statutes were put in place regarding EEO goals and requirements, but there were attempts to get around that. So as a woman of color, it was an excellent opportunity for me to, and that's why I mentioned legal was one of the areas that I focused in, nonprofits, a number of the corporations that were forward thinking in their diversity goals, because all of this was really coming into place more so than it had been in the past. So it then gave me an opportunity to place people of color, different ethnicities, genders in well-paying positions.
Do you remember some of the first people that you helped out when that started?
Well, actually, there's one. I got a call about a month ago from, at that time, it was called Philip Morris, and we placed temps there. Kelly wound up coming in as the, that's when the global staffing agencies came into place. Prior to that, we could go directly to the departments and make the arrangements. But in this instance, it was a person that we placed. So I'm thinking a good 25 years later, I get a call around the holidays thanking me for placing her in that job because she was ultimately hired. And she has prospered, done very well. And so the great part of it is, you know, giving people opportunities, placing them in these various jobs. And I don't always stay in touch with them, but they remember us, and it's good when they call back to say thank you.
So it must feel great to help, you know, to help people, especially people who felt like there wasn't anyone out there who was looking out for them.
Yes.
There must have, you must have also, besides feeling, you know, happy about those things, you must have also been a little bit terrified, right? I mean, starting a business and having so many people rely on you. What was it like being an entrepreneur with a rapidly growing company like that?
Well, that first year. In business, I almost went out of business. I was gung-ho. You know, the staffing company that I worked for previously, there were about a good 80 personnel. We were in Midtown. It was very good. I then started my company, Midtown, hired about six people, and the recession hit, and we almost went under. I wound up having to let everyone go except for one person, and that became my lesson in regards to how to stay in business first and foremost.
Gotcha. Now, as the company started to grow again, you know, you started to branch out of just legal services and administrative stuff. How did the company grow? How did you add more lines of business to the initial product?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of great staffing agencies out there, and it's very competitive. So for us, the opportunity came in government staffing. In those instances, if we were awarded the contract, they were 2-3 year engagements, and it gave us a steady job order or job request pool versus going to multiple companies, placing one, two people at a time. In the government sector, we had an opportunity to place 50, 75 people at a time. So that's how my company grew from a past $1 million company by getting various, whether it be federal, state, or city contracting opportunities. So it became an opportunity because my focus was corporate, and because of how the nature of staffing changed, a lot of those corporations were hiring global staffing because they had global companies. And the government became an opportunity for my company to look at.
Gotcha. Now you're talking, we're still talking about the 90s now. And the 90s were an incredibly, in a period of incredibly rapid change, especially in technology. You mentioned starting out doing typing. You know, by the end of the 90s, you know, typing was gone. And in some ways, you know, the whole nature of finding talent had changed almost overnight or in the space of a couple years. You guys are still around and thriving. Obviously, you adapted. You know, how did you start adapting to the changes in the technology sector that were coming along?
Oh, gosh, that was a real game changer. That's when the job boards, you know, Monster, Career Builder, those various platforms really took off. And for the whole community of staffing, we questioned where would our value, where is our need. And that's why we're not just a staffing company, we're a workforce solution firm. And in that, we work with our clients. You know, we consult with them regarding what are their workforce needs. How do you use technology to report? Because now there's a lot of reporting regarding spin, time to fill. Companies are doing their stats on how well the client or how well we, the vendor, are performing. And likewise, we're using technology to find the best talent. So it's a matter of a necessity. If you want to remain in the game, you have to update your, whether it be your technology, the different industries that you start to focus in, the qualifications that you look for in your talent. So it's a matter of remaining aware, being forward-thinking, being innovative. We belong to the American Staffing Association as well as Staffing Industry Analyst, and we're members of various local, like the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce, I'm very active with. So it's a matter of staying in the community, hearing what's taking place, and to really listen to how technology drives what our company is able to do.
So if you're a company that's not technology-driven, you know, it's focused mostly on probably the telephone and personal relationships, you see this change coming along, you know that it's important, what do you actually do? You know, you go to work the next morning, you say, I want to try to tackle this problem. I mean, presumably you don't have like a background as a programmer. Like, how do you get started solving that kind of problem as an entrepreneur?
Well, the customer service is still integral. So you still have to use the phone. You still need that personal touch, although there are VMSs. A lot of the big companies are hiring staffing firms where, in our instance, all the resumes go through the portal. There is no communication on the other side. Even when you call some companies in, you don't get the person on the other end. So that debate still continues. To what extent does technology completely take over? You know, we're now in the age of robotics, and positions are, you know, the humans filled are being taken over. So our theme this year is simply human. And in that, that means that it's about considering first and foremost the person, and then how is technology used to support that. Some of these platforms, you know, you're going into the millions of dollars. As a matter of fact, a number of those large platforms are now getting involved in staffing. So it's a combination. There's always going to be a need for, I believe, both technology and the human touch. It's just now a matter, though, of being able to invest, because technology costs. Mm-hmm. Whether it be the job boards that you're subscribing to, your front or back end technology, even payrolling, you know, time and attendance, that's electronic, and texting, you know, to our job seeker, you know, pool. It's there, and it's a matter of how much do we use it in order to compete, and on what level do we want to compete? Because there's some staffing firms that are less than six figures. I don't know how long they will be there, but they may work more from home, for instance, mm-hmm. as a recruiter versus being a multinational company. How far or how large do you want to get?
So you're a multinational company. You are based here in Brooklyn, and you've been based in Brooklyn for a long time. Tell us a little bit about Brooklyn as a sort of as a place to start and run a business, and especially how it's changed since you started.
Wow, that's interesting because, as I mentioned, I came to Brooklyn from Long Island, originally from Arkansas, and growing up on Long Island, it was open space, trees, and a girlfriend of mine, whom I went to high school with, lived in Brooklyn, and that's what got me here and into my first apartment, and I thought the place was horrible.
Really?
Dirty. You know, rodents, never saw roaches before, rats or anything. And litter, you know, we were taught to pick up, you know, if you see something on the street, definitely don't drop it yourself, but, you know, be conscious of that. Neighborly, saying hi to our neighbors. We all grew up together, you know, the kids on my block. So Brooklyn was very different, but at the same time, it was exciting because mm-hmm. it was so different from Long Island. So there was that edginess about it, and I wound up getting involved with this group called The East, And this was, you know, of course, around the late 60s. So that whole, you know, stop the war, Black Pride. And so all these things were different for me from what I grew up with, jazz and that whole, opportunity to get involved with the arts and the creativity of an urban environment. So I wound up staying here, obviously, all these years later. I live in Brooklyn, and I moved my company to Brooklyn. I started in Midtown Manhattan, and in 2003-ish, I'm losing track of time, I had an opportunity to move here, purchase the building that we're now located in. I was living down the street from my office in Borum Hill. Mm-hmm. So it became a very convenient situation. Of course, there's a lot of years in between when I first moved. I have a son and, you know, I'm now a Mima. And so my life became Brooklyn. And as a business owner moving to Brooklyn, I was very concerned about maintaining that air of Manhattan.
I was about to ask that. I asked that of a lot of people that come in here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for a lot of us, you know, who've been in Brooklyn longer than, you know, say 10 or 15 years, it's easy to remember when there was a stigma, when, you know, you'd have to explain to someone, oh, I live in Brooklyn. And they say, oh, you know, I'm sorry that you weren't able to actually get to New York City. That's completely changed now. Did you see that happening? How did that feel when that sort of changed from your perspective?
Mm-hmm. It was a combination because my office was in Manhattan and I was living in Brooklyn. And I'm starting from the very beginning, you know, right out of high school. So it was very different then. Drugs were very much an issue on Fulton Street, for instance. Fort Greene was on the cusp. As a matter of fact, I moved there and lived there for a while. I lived in a few neighborhoods, Park Slope, Fort Greene, East Flatbush, before I ultimately moved into my home now in Bed-Stuy. So it was a progression of the years. So I saw all of it. And I never looked at Brooklyn, I mean, other than when I first moved, of course, that's the culture shock mm-hmm. from Long Island. But very quickly, I acclimated. And I saw the value of the place, you know, the different neighborhoods. And I mean, although there were issues, but each neighborhood had a flavor, and it wasn't like other parts of the country where it's, you know, any town, USA, the strip malls, and it's the same thing. So the beauty was to have a different culture, different shops. The people that I recruited for my staffing company went while I was in Manhattan, as well as once I got to Brooklyn. A lot were from Brooklyn, surprisingly, although those that lived further in, it was so interesting to see they hadn't been into skyscrapers. Hmm. And this is even people coming from, you know, Westchester, you know, so how much do people move and travel beyond their neighborhoods? So with me being an entrepreneur and I traveled and that's always been a hobby of mine, I've always embraced diversity. Mm-hmm. So but I never went to the Bronx, you know, or Staten Island. So we all tend to stay where we are most familiar, it seems. So I never bought into, you know, Brooklyn is horrible, or Brooklyn is this, or the Bronx is that, in a negative way, just seeing the different ethnicities and the contribution that those neighborhoods contribute to the city of ours.
Right. Now, a lot of people would say that even this topic of conversation is, you know, sort of offensive in the sense that, like, you know, Brooklyn wasn't discovered. There's been people here for hundreds of years, you know, and there's an increasing concern that at this point there's like two New York cities that are living side by side, and one of them is winning, and that the side that's winning is the people that have, you know, resources, and that there's really becoming less and less of a place for everyone in New York. You know, do you see that happening? Does that concern you too?
Oh, yeah. My dad was, I guess you'd call him a socialist. And so he always talked about equality, you know, the importance of that. And I certainly witnessed it even where I live. You know, I'm in Bed-Stuy now. I've been there 8 years. And the person that I got my home from wanted to make sure that a person of color, you know, purchased because of the gentrification that they were witnessing, and even downtown Brooklyn, that's happening. So It's a tough topic. We want to, you know, maintain that essence of what makes a community what it is, and how do we handle that change? You know, so when development takes place, there is an economic price to that. And at the same time, there's the cost. You know, how much do you buy the building for, and subsequently, how much do you have to rent it for? And balanced, of course. Affordable housing is clearly an issue. I belong to a community group called Brooklyn Neighborhood Improvement Association, and they're based in Crown Heights, the organization that's been around for about 38 years. So these issues existed back then in regards to, you know, maintaining the buildings that tenants lived in that were from a lower economic class. And today, it's a rapid fast forward because you see the neighborhoods changing very quickly. I mean, I might as well say I'm a Brooklynite because I've been here for so long, and I haven't maybe been in the neighborhood for a few months, and where did this building come from? Mm-hmm. You know, so now from an economic perspective, who's going to live in those buildings? So is there an overstockage, you know, that we're getting ready to face here that have forced people that may have been able to stay in the communities but have been forced out because of the high rents? There clearly needs to be more of a conversation around that, and how do you maintain that integrity of the neighborhood? Yes, there's a need for improvement of services. A lot of those landlords just neglected the building, so it put the people that live there in a bad situation in terms of support and housing as well as neighborhood development. And now all of this change is taking place when other people have moved in. So the ones that were there are very upset. I can understand that, because where were those services when I was living here all those years ago? And now everything has changed and I'm being pushed out. So my part as a staffing company is to, you know, provide people with the jobs and good paying jobs that will at least enable them to have a make a living wage where they can support themselves and their families. And then on the other side, of course, affordable housing so that, you know, people can remain where they want to live.
What are some of the ways that you've seen that people in business in Brooklyn can get involved in the community? You mentioned being active in the Chamber of Commerce. You know, what are some of the communities that you're a part of, or that people can be a part of, you know, in Brooklyn as a business person?
Oh, there's so many. It's you know, what do you want to choose? You know, education is very dear to me, and I started my nonprofit, Teach to Excel, back in 2007. And so as people in the business community, those that are entrepreneurs, what can we do to give back? Because our growth is, as far as my growth is, there by the grace of God. Mm-hmm. I think about, well, what did I do that was so special that enabled me to thrive? And so it's a conscious effort to help others. And there's so many different ways that you can do that. With the Brooklyn Chamber, I got involved because when my business moved on Livingston Street, it was like the back door, you know, the back alley. And when you talk about services and quality, grungy, rats, garbage. And I joined the Brooklyn Chamber. And more so, how can, you know, I improve the area that I'm in? Because my clients are coming to me. Not in Manhattan anymore, but now, you know, downtown Brooklyn, which is on the fringe of downtown Brooklyn. And in joining, I was told, oh, the downtown partnership, they're in the process of forming a bid. Mm-hmm. And I got involved with that, and the rest is history. So there's business-to-business support. There's business-to-consumer report by support. A lot of companies, their employees help, you know, join groups. There's matching contributions. If the staff is able to, at least for my company, if my staff belong to various nonprofits, we make every effort to support them. In the education arena with Teach to Excel, grassroots funding to help, you know, students in low-income communities. Most of the other associations or memberships that I have are all company-based, you know, mm-hmm. building my business, supporting my business. I do mentor other smaller businesses. So it's a matter of what does the company, you know, want to do in its realm of social responsibility, and how much does it encourage its staff to get involved in helping others, whether it be a clothing drive, school drive, you know, holiday drive, or actively becoming members of the various nonprofits.
You mentioned you do some mentoring. You know, presumably, you know, you talk to people who are themselves interested in starting their own business. You know, what are some of the things you tend to say to people who are thinking about that?
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I might have just maybe in my other life I should have been a teacher, because one of the organizations that I'm with, I just got a call the other day asking me to mentor for their upcoming program, and that's difficult for me because I'm very much still entrenched in being a business owner, and my schedule from one day to the next varies. My business is people, so in that though, I'm always counseling. It's just my nature to give as much advice as I can about what does it take to start your own business, and how to stay in business. What are the qualities that require it? As a staffing company, I come across people all the time, and they ask me, what did I do? And then I'll ask them, you know, what do you feel that you need to do? Mm-hmm. Because it's the idea of starting a business is much more difficult to do it than it is to have the dream or the desire. And so the things that I talk to them about is really based upon where they are currently. I don't try to discourage because they're going to face that enough.
They'll get plenty discouraged on
yeah,
their own.
Exactly.
Right.
But it's, you know, asking the questions that will enable them to think about it's the legal team, the structure, your operation. You know, people always talk about, you know, what is your business plan, and how do you navigate, you know, from point A to point B. So it's always a conversation.
Tell me a little bit about what's next for PAI. What are you guys doing in the future?
Well, we just started identifying ourselves more as subject matter experts. As I mentioned, it's not just about staffing, which is waiting for the company to call you for that temp or that temp to hire or that direct hire. As subject matter experts, we want to be more consultative with our clients, and we've done it more so with the job seeker. How do you get the job? You know, what are the qualities or skill sets that they need in order to move forward in their career? But at the same time, there's a lot of consultation now with the companies, whether it be around the Article 15A, you know, as a minority woman-owned business, there's the whole vote now, you know, to renew the MWBE program on the state level. So it's about educating businesses, and it's not just about the MWBE program, but also related to the statutes as it pertains to your labor force. So, for instance, the other day we had a roundtable discussion on the Paid Family Leave Act. And so not only is the conversation with our immediate clients, but also with the business community, and how are their businesses being impacted as a result of managing the workforce of today. So that's the next avenue or path for my company. And we're very excited about it, and are in quite a number of conversations about the different types of topics that we can entertain with our customers.
Excellent. Penna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
You're welcome. You've been listening to From Day One, How Brooklyn Entrepreneurs Got Their Start. This series is made possible by The Bridge, a news site dedicated to reporting on business in Brooklyn. With help from Complex Ventures, a Brooklyn-based digital agency working with more-than-profit companies and organizations. For more from The Bridge, to learn more about today's guest, or to listen to more episodes of From Day One, visit us at thebridgebk.com. That's THEBRIDGEBK.com. From Day One is produced by Cora Feeder, Steve Kep, and myself, Nick Bailey. Audio editing and post-production by Steph Derwin. Our theme music was performed by Jody Rockwell and the Ambulamps, and our founding sponsor was the Made in New York Media Center. Thanks for listening.